Well, those knuckleheads who are touting global warming are really getting ready to go crazy in Paris. Personally, I find it to be crazy for somebody to claim that that climate change is worse than ISIS or causes ISIS. But in honor of the Paris meeting of this anti-global warming body that our own president is very proudly speaking at, here's a little bit of Bernie Sanders for you.
Senator Sanders, you said you want to rid the planet of ISIS. In the previous debate, you said the greatest threat to national security was climate change. Do you still believe that?
Absolutely. In fact, climate change is directly related to the growth of terrorism. And if we do not get our act together and listen to what the scientists say, you're going to see countries all over the world. This is what the CIA says. They're going to be struggling over limited amounts of water, limited amounts of land to grow their crops. And you're going to see all kinds of international conflict. But of course, international terrorism is a major issue that we have got to address today.
Well, I mean, climate change is either causing terrorism or it's not. These guys need an excuse to go kill somebody. Here's another statement from Sanders.
Joining us now from Des Moines is Democratic presidential candidate and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Senator Sanders, I want to ask you, pick up right where we left off last night. You mentioned that climate change, in fact, is related to terrorism. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, that's not only my observation, John. That is what the CIA and the Department of Defense tells us. And the reason is pretty obvious. If we are going to see an increase in drought and flooding and extreme weather disturbances as a result of climate change, what that means is that peoples all over the world are going to be fighting over limited natural resources. If there is not enough water, if there is not enough land to grow your crops, then you're going to see migrations of people fighting.
All right. Where has ISIS ever stated that they're fighting for water or land so that they can grow their crops?
Fighting over land that will sustain them, and that will lead to international conflict. So I think when we talk about all of the possible ravages of climate change, which to my mind is just a huge planetary crisis, increased international conflict is one of the issues that we have got to appreciate will happen.
But how does drought connect with attacks by ISIS in the middle of Paris?
Well, what happens, say, in Syria, for example, and there's some thought about this, is that when you have drought, when people can't grow their crops, they're going to migrate into cities. And when people migrate into cities and they don't have jobs, there's going to be a lot more instability, a lot more unemployment, and people will be subject to the types of propaganda that Al-Qaeda and ISIS are using right now. So where you have discontent, where you have instability, that's where problems arise. And certainly, without a doubt, climate change will lead to that.
Joining us now from Des Moines,
so that's,
Democratic presidential candidate.
This is the guy that wants to, I mean, people make fun of Trump. When has Trump ever said anything crazy like that? And this is the person who wants to lead the country. This guy would be like Barack Obama on crack. And so these people are meeting in Paris, and they're actually going to be spending hours and hours discussing how climate change leads to jihad. Now, I mean, there is this war that's going on in Syria. Where is the explanation of how many people are leaving Syria and going into Europe? By the way, it's 1.5 million Middle Eastern refugees this year have gone into Europe, if you can imagine that. Where is one shred, one scintilla of evidence that these people are dislocated because of drought caused by global warming, and now they've gone to the cities and have been persuaded to join the jihad because they're upset over global warming? This is just the craziest. This is the kind of thing that we've got to deal with in this country for the next year and a half, however long this president is still in there. there's a company or a website, I think it's Climate Depot, who's putting out and releasing a film on why global warming is a hoax during this Paris meeting. Anyway, not to get off on that, but yes, Kelly here. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving on today's the 30th of November, still in November. Hope you got time to spend with friends and family. So that was 4 days. And we had on Thursday, we had almost an inch of rain, about 9/10 of an inch of rain from Thursday to Friday. So that was pretty impressive. Now it's pretty cold outside. I did have somebody stop by my office and deliver some coffee and pie. A thank you. I think it was for my birthday. If I mentioned it, my birthday was last Thursday. But appreciate that. All right, I've got some NAACP. I've got some NCAA football scores for you. And these games obviously went over a few days. Number 22, Navy, 31. Number 17, Houston, 52. Number 4, Iowa, 28. Nebraska, 20. Number 15, Oregon, 52. Oregon State, 42. That was an exciting game. Number 11, TCU, 28. Number 12, Baylor, 21. And looking for some other games that have got some ranked teams in them. Looking. Okay, number 7, Stanford, 38. Number 9, Notre Dame, 36. That was a great game. Number 23, LSU, 19. Texas A&M, 7. Number 3, Oklahoma, 58. Number 14, Oklahoma State, 23, and let's see, number 16, Ole Miss, 38, Mississippi State, 27, number 10, Florida State, 27, number 18, Florida, 2, I guess they got a touchback, number 25, Wisconsin, 31, Minnesota, 21, number 13, Northwestern, 24, Illinois, 14, number 5, Michigan State, 55, Penn State, 16, number 24, USC, 40, UCLA, 21, number 8, North Carolina, 45, North Carolina State, 34. Number 21, Utah, 20. Colorado, 14. Number 2, Alabama, 29. Auburn, 13. Number 6, the Ohio State, 42. Michigan, Carolina, 32. Number 1, Clemson, 37. So there's your college scores. There is this kid playing for Stanford, and his name is Christian McCaffrey, and this guy is on the verge of breaking Barry Sanders' all-time record for most yards in a season. He's an unbelievable player. His dad was Ed McCaffrey, who played for the Broncos. His grandfather on his mother's side, I just was doing some research on this guy. His name was Sim. He was a world record sprinter. He was obviously in the 1950s, but he set the world record in sprinting 100 meters, 200 meters, or 100 yards, 200 yards. Anyway, this kid is he's absolutely phenomenal, and he's in the Heisman race as well. Well, we'll come back and talk about our NFL scores. That game last night was absolutely breathtaking. The Patriots and the Broncos, it had a different outcome than you may suspect. I thought the officiating sucked. We'll come back and talk about that. Kelly O'Connell, 6:15 on the 30th of November. You're listening to AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. Be back to talk about the NFL. Thank you. All right, so we've got really some interesting games. The season's shaking out. There's only, well, I don't want to ruin it for you, but there's only one undefeated team out there anymore. So, but it was a great game. All right, here is your Arizona Cardinals versus the 49ers. Closer than you may have guessed.
Cardinals traveling to San Francisco to take on the 49ers, and Arizona has struggled playing in Santa Clara. Third quarter, Blaine Gabbert connects with Vance McDonald, the tight end, for the touchdown. Next 49ers possession, Gabbert looking downfield, finds a leaping Torrey Smith. Get up! A 40-yard gain. That would lead to a field goal to tie the game at 13. And Carson Palmer, here he comes. Off balance there. It's J.J. Nelson deep. It's brought down at the 3-yard line. Then Carson Palmer says, no one's open. Come on, guys. I'm going to take this in. I'm going to rush for this one. The last time I did this was 2012. What was that spike? Did he get hurt? He's all right. 49ers last try. Gabbert finds Anquan Boldin over the middle. But he is short of the first down. Cardinals win it 19-13.
All right, so that was a good game. Another tight game was the Steelers versus the Seahawks.
Seahawks hosting the Steelers. Russell Wilson. Big birthday for him today. Fourth quarter, Seahawks down by one. Wilson, deep to the right corner. The pass falls incomplete, and Jimmy Graham is down after the play. His right leg gets out. He would be carted off in an air cast. Big loss for the offense. Late in the fourth, Seahawks trail 27-26. Wilson fakes the handoff. Goes deep down the right side to wide open Doug Baldwin. Seahawks go for two but don't convert. They lead 32-27. Then Roethlisberger tucks it. Runs up the middle. Gets tackled at the three. Steelers kick a field goal. They trail by two, and Roethlisberger would exit the game to be checked for a concussion. So here come the Hawks. Wilson throws over the middle to Baldwin, who takes it to the house. A career-high 5 touchdowns for Russell Wilson on his birthday. Seahawks now 6-5 this season. They win it 39.
All right. So that was a pretty good game. And I've got for you your... Well, I'm trying to figure out how many San Diego fans we got around here. Forget that. I'll just read you that one. All right, so here is your – I got to do your Cowboys first, and you're not going to be happy to hear this, but you probably, if you're a Cowboy fan – oh, and I do. All right, so let's do here a little bit of Green Bay and Chicago, which was a remarkable game.
I'm ESPN NFL Nation Packers reporter Rob Domofsky with Bears reporter Jeff Dickerson. Thanksgiving night, Bears win a shocker, really, 17-13. We're here to discuss the game and hand out game balls. Jeff, for the Bears, who is it?
Well, you're so thrown off by my game ball, you forgot your coat in 30 degrees and rain, because my game ball is the improbable. Jay Cutler. He never plays well in this series. First ever win at Lambeau Field. Wasn't his best game ever, but he was efficient after a rough first quarter. And the most important stat with Cutler as it is every time he plays Green Bay, no interceptions. He doesn't turn the ball over. And when he protects the football, even though, Rob, the Bears are rebuilding, they're a pretty tough team to beat. So Jay Cutler gets my game ball. Who gets yours?
Well, not a lot of choices, J.D., especially when the offense puts up only 13 points. But it is an offensive player that gets it. It's Eddie Lacy. He was their entire offense. Now, he wasn't perfect. He fumbled, and he nearly blew the touchdown where he flipped the ball away a little too early. But he did rush for 100 yards, more than 100 yards, for the second straight game. So at least Eddie Lacy is the least of their problems on offense. But they have a ton of problems. For more on this game, stay with ESPN.com.
All right, so Eddie Lacy is like 230 pounds. He's like the fastest guy on the team. So anyway, Aaron Rodgers, something has happened to him. He's taken a step back. He's de-evolving. And some people claim it's because he's living in sin with his girlfriend. that he has suffered a massive loss of confidence. I have no idea. But here is, she's an actress called Olivia Munn. Here is an amazing and saddening game from the Panthers to the Cowboys. I've never seen back-to-back interceptions like this.
NFL Nation reporters David Newton and Todd Archer at AT&T Stadium after the Carolina Panthers beat the Dallas Cowboys 33-14 here for our game ball segment. And David, you got a lot of guys you can pick from. Who you got?
Well, first, I want to thank Cam Newton for throwing in the twist on one of his dancing celebrations, because some of these other dances, I didn't know what he was doing. So I've given him the game ball the last couple of weeks. He's not getting it this week. It goes to Luke Kuechly, their middle linebacker. Kuechly reminded today why he is the best middle linebacker in the game and why this defense deserves more recognition they've been getting, because a lot of people have been looking at what Cam and the offense have been doing lately. Kuechly's back-to-back interceptions on back-to-back plays. That hasn't happened in a long time. It just showed his versatility and what he can do and what this defense is all about. So I'm going to give it to Luke Kuechly and try not to dance this week.
I have really not a lot to choose from this one. Can't go with Tony Romo. They, you know, his collarbone's in bad shape. Again, intercepted three times. But I went with a guy who was replaced by, and it's Matt Castle. 10-19, 93 yards, had the Cowboys only touchdown. If they need Matt Castle to start some games, remember, he's 0-4 as a starter this year. Cowboys haven't won a game without Tony Romo as a starter since week 17, 2010. So the Cowboys in their world are hurt. The Panthers move on. They're still undefeated. For more on the Cowboys and the Panthers.
All right, so that was a sad game. Now, you're talking about, like, the preeminent defense in the NFL, the Panthers. This Luke Kuechly guy is unbelievable. And he took two interceptions off of Romo, one after the other, Romo. And the first one, he ran back for a touchdown. That's the second touchdown that they got on an interception, a pick six. And then the very next play, he gets another interception. Then Romo gets tackled. And, of course, the worst-case scenario happens. He hurts his collarbone again. He walked off with his hand at his side, with kind of held up against his chest. And so the news came out. He had a hairline fracture of his clavicle, his collarbone. He's not going to be coming back this year. But one of the interesting things was that he had seven fractures in his collarbone the last time he got hurt 2 months ago. So it's kind of a sad day. Now, I heard some people saying Romo's days are done. And at 35 years old, he does look like he's past his prime a little bit. But who can tell? He's just coming off of an injury. And so then you've got in the next game, in the capper game for us here, is the Broncos versus the Patriots, an amazing game. That's all you can say. An absolutely breathtaking game. The officials got involved, overly involved in the game. Now, which to me ruined it. But, and you've got more and more of these Patriots getting injured. I mean, pretty soon Tom Brady's going to have his dad out there catching passes. But they still managed to put a good game together, but the Broncos stood up, and now they're talking about the Broncos going to the Super Bowl. Check this out.
21-17. Still the cheese is a little more binding. Here now, this is the tough play for the Patriots. Pass to Gronkowski. You see him get hit. You see him go down, and that's a big, tough guy, and he is hurting Gronkowski. Stewart comes right across him. Hit on his right knee. Down. Got up for a little bit, but eventually carted off. 69 seconds left. It's up to Tom. He got no timeouts to work with. Finds Andre Caldwell. Scott Chandler for 22. And then Brandon LaFell, 14-yard gain. 47-yard field goal attempt with 4 seconds left for Steven Gostkowski. That guy is money. Wind, rain, good weather, snow. He is excellent. So we're tied at 24. We go to overtime. Pats had a three and out. We showed you this just as we came back from the commercial. C.J. Anderson busting through. He got the 3 feet they needed for the first down. 30-24. Brock Osweiler, the second quarterback to beat Tom Brady in just his first or second career start. The other one, Mark Sanchez. We'll hope for better things in the future for Brock. Game-winning drive in overtime for him. Patriots lose in OT on a touchdown for the first time since week 10 of 1987. That's, as we said, had won 47 straight games when leading by 14 points in the fourth quarter. Big concern moving forward, condition of Gronkowski, as the Pats are unbeaten no more.
All right, so in terms of Rob Gronkowski, it looked terrible, but we've got some news here on the injury to this fantastic tight end who's scored more touchdowns than any other tight end. And that'll be coming up here just now, just in a minute. But I have to tell you about the game. The game was terrible in that there was a play where the Patriots, who the Broncos had down on the like 10-yard line, a Patriots lineman came through and knocked on his rear end like he was a little kid, the lineman for the Broncos. And then went and tackled the quarterback, and they called a ticky-tack foul in the end zone. All right, that was one. There was another problem where they gave the Broncos an injury timeout but didn't tell them that the Patriots was still ticking. So Tom Brady had 10 seconds left. He throws the pass. They get the kick, but that game, in my opinion, if the officials were doing their job, should have been a victory for the Patriots. I still think the Patriots are going to be in the Super Bowl. But here's on Gronkowski.
Krampus, rated PG-13.
In the final minutes of the fourth quarter, I watched Rob Gronkowski come out of this X-ray lab, and he walked without a limp down this hallway for about 75 yards past those TV trucks to the Patriots locker room. So the injury does not appear to be serious. Now, on Monday, he's expected to undergo further tests. But after the game, he was angry. Maybe he was angry that he was called for his fifth offensive pass interference that negated a long pass play. Maybe he was angry that he was undercut by the Broncos and it knocked him out of the game. Maybe he was angry that he wasn't on the field in overtime to help the Patriots win this game.
No maybes about it, friends. That's exactly how he felt. I'm reluctant to say the game was stolen from the Patriots because, frankly, the Broncos were getting pounded all game and they stood up. The Patriots fumbled the ball and lost it. And whenever the Broncos fumbled it, they got their own fumbles back. But the officiating was ticky-tack. There were ticky-tack calls that were made that brought back big plays. It was a terrible to see that in such a game. Let them play, I'd say. It's 6:33. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450. We're going to come back and talk about this stupid, a little more on this stupid climate. So ridiculous. Be right back. All right, so we've got this this climate change thing going on in Paris, and it is scandalous. I mean, it's really discredited science, largely disproven theories, and you know, you've got these extremely left heads of state that are just killing themselves to try to be have the most liberal policies with this stuff. It's really ridiculous. But it's what is happening. They say that basically the president is fighting for his legacy. I mean, I shudder to think about what his legacy is going to be, but he's fighting for his legacy. And, you know, here's one of the things I wanted to mention to you. I'm going to get back to this later. There's this great politician that's coming out of Hawaii who's a Democrat, and she's really challenging the party. But, you know, when you're talking about a person who's so convinced of their opinion that they cannot be confronted, they cannot be challenged, they refuse to do any research on the opposition position, that's what you're doing with our... He doesn't believe not any attention that there's no way I believe depth that I and he goes with it, and you know this lady had come out. She's a news person. I'm trying to remember her name. She was a big defection from ABC News, and she basically said that if you're trying to do unbiased reporting, you're hated in this mainstream media because she was saying that the word coming out of the White House is the president refuses to study. He will not study groups that have been accused of terrorism if he doesn't already believe that they're terrorists. So, I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Well, let's do a little bit of... weather, and we're going to come back and just get into this scurrilous activity. And we've got this storm that's coming across, and it's going to be touching on New Mexico, so I wanted to tell you about it. It's a new storm called Delphi. I believe that's the name of it. And so we've had a lot of storming over the weekend, and there were some deaths in the Midwest, basically. Texas had a lot of flooding and snow, and part of the problem was that there was ice storms, and so there was trees coming down, the roads were covered with ice and everything. Well, we've got a little bit, I'll get to that. I got a little computer issues here, but here's your weather locally. All right, so we've got this supposedly extremely significant meeting in Paris, and you've got climate protesters, and they arrested about 40 of them because they believed that some of them were getting ready to be violent at some level, whether probably not attacking people, but maybe doing some violent protests down in the streets. And so given that there was just this... issue with ISIS or with whoever it was that blew people up, and I believe ISIS did take credit for it. You've got a little clash of the protesters in Paris. All right, so that's what it sounds like. There's a lot of, obviously, bottles being broken, but the police and the crowds massing. But you've got this climate summit, and it's absolutely surreal at a time when we're being told that we could be on the verge of another mini ice age. Yeah. The sun is going to be hibernating. They say the sun is going to be hibernating, and we could be going through a few decades of cooling. And typically, you know, it's not unusual to see these people getting up there and fighting for issues that have been either dealt with in the past already, or they're just made up. They're made up issues. There is a huge debate. There is NASA has said we have not had any global warming for the last 6 years. Others have said that we haven't had it for 20 years. A huge number of people in the United States, I believe 95%, have drawn the conclusion that global warming is not that big of a deal. And I think part of the problem is it's the little boy that cried wolf. You keep telling people that the earth is going to get cooked or is being cooked. The seas are rising, you know, Miami and New York and all these other cities that are on the waterline are going to get flooded. Tens of millions of people are going to die from famine, hundreds of millions. And, you know, what do you expect? What conclusion do you expect people to draw when it's obvious that the government has been systematically lying to them? You cannot doubt, you cannot disagree with the notion that Obama has lied because he was caught with his pants down on the Obamacare. And there's more articles coming out saying it's Obamacare is not financially tenable. It cannot make it. Well, here's a clip from Sky News on the Paris summit.
Hopes for this conference. There have been many in the past over the years and promises made, promises broken. Will this time be different? Yes, it will. The world has been working for the last 3 years to put this one in place. It's well prepared. Around 180 countries have put in their intentions for 2030 under no compulsion to do so. They've put them in because they want to. Something like 140 leaders are arriving in Paris today and will be all speaking tomorrow. There's a much bigger commitment, much greater togetherness this time than there was 6 years ago.
There's this key question, isn't there? Well, I know we've talked about this before, and it is of oversight, enforcement, and potentially sanctions. This isn't even going to be a treaty. Who will say to country X or country Y in 15 years' time, you haven't carried out those policies, you haven't bought in those restrictions on carbon emissions, now you must be punished? It's never going to happen.
And that's not the way it's done. You're not going to get a police force from Mars or a court from Venus enforcing these kinds of things. And it wouldn't be very smart to think that you could. Countries are doing this because they think that there's great advantage in growing much more cleanly, getting rid of air pollution in a much more attractive environment. They're doing it because they think it's attractive, and they're doing it because they think they should do it. Because collectively, to destroy the environment for our children and grandchildren would not be something that's right to do. And more and more people see that.
We can't leave the politics out of it all, though, can we? Here, this is not, we understand, going to be turned into a legally binding treaty because of the objections, plenty of nations, but leading them, the United States. They don't want to be bound by that kind of agreement.
It will be an international agreement on the processes for submitting and reviewing and measuring the emissions, and for exchange of ideas on how to intensify that process. That part will be an international agreement, and that will be legally binding in the sense that any international agreement is. They can't call it a treaty or a protocol because that would need Senate approval. They won't call it that. They'll call it an agreement, and it does not need Senate approval. And the world is clearly understanding of this issue. It's been on the agenda for a long time. It's been thought through.
I mean, in the politics of it, were you happy with the process, which in effect some people have described it as setting your own homework, this idea that countries brought to the table what they could do rather than overall recommendations that, well, you emit this amount of CO2 and you must cut by this amount?
What's remarkable is they have done their own homework, and it's a good deal less than anything like business as usual. Countries want to do this, and they want to do it together. We have to find a way. It won't always be easy.
Well, I mean, you know, you couldn't find a person that was more, you know, talking about, he sounds like a politician, and it's shameful that these people are wasting precious resources. You know, you never know what the future holds, and all of the money that they're going to throw down the toilet on this stuff. What if there's a disaster coming that we desperately need these resources to fight, and we've got these essentially these overeducated imbeciles meeting in Paris to agree to chop our economies in half so that we can survive this coming global warming that's obviously not coming. It's not here. You know, and it takes more faith to support the global warming movement than it does any religion. But here's some of the headlines that I picked up the last couple of days. A skeptical climate documentary set to rock UN climate summit. The claim that giant flying boulders will result from global warming. Meantime, California freezing negative 11 degrees in the Sierra amid a snow and ice storm. Decade-long ice age predicted as sun hibernates. I told you about that. Poll, growing doubts that human activity is to blame for warming. Hollande is the leader of Paris attacking the protesters. And they're calling this, they're bringing back up to the screen here, data fiddling, biggest science scandal ever. If you didn't hear about that, what they do is they take the raw data that's coming out of these stations that are measuring temperature, and they're fiddling with them to make them more accurate. Now, that doesn't really make any sense. They're adjusting these models, these temperature gauges. They're ticking them up. And a guy found out about this. I think it's Godot. There's a guy named Godot out there that has got a climate science site. And what he did is he started checking the data that was posted from these stations versus what was recorded. And he found out the recorded data was being raised. So that's why every year we get a high, you know, hottest year in record. But you really, I mean, there is climate change of some kind out there. There's weather change, I should say. But that doesn't lead a person to believe that there has to be this massive cooking coming. Here's just a few more headlines for you. And former government expert disproves climate change and says the world will soon be cooling down. And that's from the UK Express. Global warming. Antarctic is cooling and has been cooling, and it's been putting on ice, and that's from NASA. And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hey, this is Tyler Kelly.
Hey, Tyler. Good morning to you. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. What's on your mind?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you just said that NASA has discounted global warming, but just check their website, and they said that, you know, there are signs of a global warming effect on their website. And I was just wondering what you were saying about that.
Well, that's a great question, because you know, I wonder if there's headlines that come out and then the headlines are changed. And it's like there is some battle at NASA in some of these weather gathering agencies where someone comes out with a pure scientific report. And then I think it starts a fight with somebody. But there have been reports coming out of NASA, for example, that we've never had more ice in Antarctica.
I've seen those papers, but the point is although there are tiny, you know, climate changes that do happen, you know, or weather changes, I guess is the proper term.
Yeah.
I mean, it is within the community. There are an average global temperature rise. I do have scientifically peer-reviewed papers.
Yeah.
Like to read those.
Well, I don't mind reading your papers, but here's the thing. What I don't think they're really coming to grips with, there is fudging going on. Big the headline that I told a minute ago, the greatest hoax history is that they've gone and these working on this are ticking up. They're taking the actual mean temperature. They're adjusting it higher because they say it's not accurate. Now.
Oh, yeah.
That begs the question as to what the actual temperature is.
Now, I will agree that I, for one, don't believe anything that the government really tells me. And when you have global governments to do try and
you know, manipulate the market to produce some kind of results. That is skeptical. But I think the key here is to at least agree that humans do have an involvement in climate due to the burning of fossil fuels. But as opposed to how we come about the solution through government means or through a free market means, I think is the real issue.
I'm with you on the free market there, but I don't see why you can't accept the fact that it is possible that a lot of this stuff has been falsified, because we found in the East Anglia emails that when these top science experts are talking with each other, they thought off the record, never to be heard, that they have agreed that anybody who tries to publish these papers is going to be driven out of academia. And basically, they also admitted in these East Anglia emails that there was falsification based on the fact that they're not really reporting the true temperature.
East Anglia falsification. Okay, and I know that's hard. That's a hard thing too. I mean, as far as quantifying temperature trends,
it is impossible, Tyler. It is impossible to truly accurately measure the temperature of the Earth. We used to have a lot more stations out there. Most of the surface of the Earth is water. We have less stations than ever gathering temperatures.
We could still use other factors as far as you do the average temperature trends, but you can do sea level rises that happen. You can also
the world's top expert on rising, who were one of these international bodies, said it's the scientific host century. I take a break. Any chance you can call back in the next? Interesting.
Yeah.
Good call, Tyler. Thank you. Have a good day. I hope to hear from you in the next hour.
Yep, you too.
Okay. So let's take a little break after the hour.
It's happening to you every night. One and another can seems. But now, quick, unnatural solution. Snorestop, by a team of physicians and has been helping people sleep for over 18 years, is the number.
I'm here.
Snorestop sprays or tablets are now available nationwide at a store near you or you. Snorestop.com. Don't wait. It's time to try Snorestop and make every night a better night for both of you.
Thanks, Snorestop. Now I'm back.
So don't wait. Try Snorestop, the number one anti-snoring medicine in the U.S. Spray or today at a store near you or online at Snorestop.com. Snorestop.com. Snorestop. Keeping you together.
Question from Estrada Law, please. Because of my own family experiences with elderly parents, I use a multifaceted approach to help you and your family. Can you start your will, trust, probate avoidance planning, or Medicaid crisis management? Let me help you. I want to make sure you are set up for success, not disaster. There is a proven way to plan it forward. Let me show you how. I'm focused on helping you plan ahead for life's possible events. This approach manage and put you and your family at EstradaLawPC.com and find out more.
Plan it forward with Estrada Law PC. Estate planning, wills and trusts, and asset protection. Or Estrada Law.
Steph is modeling the computer work at
Real
All right, so it is 7:05, the 30th of November. It's a little bit chilly outside, and I've got to tell you that I'm going to try to give you the temperature here right now. My phone is reloading its application for the Weather Channel, so for some reason this takes longer than it should. But anyway, it feels about 30 degrees outside. Maybe it's 35, but it's pretty chilly outside. Speaking of chilliness, it's 34 right now, but speaking of being chilly versus hot, all right, so you've got the claim, and I'm one of the people that are claiming this, that we've got a meeting, a world meeting of leaders from around the globe in Paris who are trying to save the idea of fighting against what they call AGW, anthropomorphic or anthropogenic. Somebody pointed out I was misstating that. Man-created, anthropogenic, global warming. And they're trying to do this thing without a treaty. Now, many people in the listening public are at the common citizens on the street have grave doubts about global warming. And I would say, for the most part, it's because they don't see it in their own lives. They see weather anomalies, and they don't really understand where those come from. They themselves really don't know where a lot of these weather anomalies come from, other than claiming they're from global warming. Do you remember when we had all those hurricanes back in the, like 2005, whenever it was, down in Miami, and people like Al Gore were standing up and saying this is just the tip of the iceberg, not to mix metaphors, but it's going to get worse. It's just going to be a catastrophe. There's going to be permanent, you know, hurricanes. And now we barely have had a hurricane in the last 10 years. So these people that make these claims, these fearmongers, it seems like they never pay a price, you know? Al Gore, what price has he paid for being wrong about virtually everything that he said? Where are the Arctic regions and the Antarctic regions that are free of ice, like he claimed, and the spiking temperatures? Here's from the UK Express. Global warming, NASA says Antarctic has been cooling for past 6 years. And this is from November 28, 2015. This is 2 days ago. Antarctic temperatures have cooled over the past 6 years, according to the U.S. space agency NASA. An intensive scientific study on both poles has shown that the Antarctic ice is thickening and sea ice is growing. And we have another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, it's me, Tyler.
Tyler, yeah, round two. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I know. So there are going to be studies where they're going to put, they're going to find that things are happening that are different to the contrary, to the belief that is had by the community.
To the contrary. Okay. All right. But
you have to look at the grand picture of all of the data before you can,
of course,
you know, I mean, single studies will say one thing, but overall you have to make interpretations over everything.
Well, let me ask you this, Tyler, because it seems like you've thought about this and studied it. You seem like a smart guy, maybe a college student. When Bernie Sanders gets up and says the greatest problem in the world is global warming, and the president gets up and says, global warming is causing ISIS, I mean, doesn't that cause you to rub your eyes?
That does. So the thing with that is, warming is one of the most important factors to us globally. Any war that we have or any combat we have, we have which it's important and geology. Absolutely. Resources are scarce.
But
water
is global
is
warming
not,
causing
no,
ISIS? Tyler, isn't that? I mean, that's just
does it cause,
maddening
does it cause
to hear that.
No, U.S. policy in the Middle East, as
as far as who we fund and who we try to side with, that does cause ISIS. I think that is a little hyperbolic to say, you know, that that's the exact cause of something like that. But I think the point is there
Tyler, it is this overkill that people hear that causes them to not put faith in the government and not to put faith in the president and Bernie Sanders and people like that, because they hear that and it strikes them as not a scientific statement, but a political statement.
Now, I will agree. I will give you some information on my backing. I am an anarchist, so I don't believe in the government at all. But but when you have other side that completely rolls my anything, I understand the skepticism and I appreciate it. But at the same time, I think you have to at least come to grips with the fact that humans do have
an
interaction on the climate around them.
All right, fair enough. But it turns out, and this has actually been information's been out there for years. The president does not study opposition, the opposition position. He does not study opposition science. He, as far as I know, is not aware of the science, the scientific studies or figures that would come out and seem to suggest that his ideas on global warming are incorrect. But it's like he's snowblind. He can't see anything that he doesn't already agree with. This just came out in the media, but in the book The Amateur by Edward Klein, he said in there that's the kind of a person he is. He's a demagogue. He's an ideologue. How can we, if this was a problem, how could we get proper leadership on it? It seems like it's just a political football to pass these wealth redistribution schemes.
No, that's a great question. I think that's definitely expected. I mean, most politicians that we elect have absolutely no scientific backing. They're lawyers, they're business people. They don't know what goes into scientific research, and I wouldn't expect them to know that. What I think should happen is that people should understand these concepts, and we have a nation that's about 90% you don't really put
the average person supposed to draw when they look out the window every day. There might be more or less rain, there might be El Nino or whatever, a drought here and there, but it just seems life is going on as it always has, and we're getting fear-mongered every day. By the year 2000 there was supposed to be no ice on the poles, and now we find out NASA is reporting that the Antarctic temperatures are lower than they've been, and there's more sea ice and there's more ice there to make up for all of the lost glacial ice across the globe. And why isn't the various, you know, the Germans, the French, all these different people who are representing their nations, why aren't they factoring this in? Why aren't these facts worth anything? Why are only their facts have any value?
I would stress to the public, you know, if you're looking outside and you're trying to check your weather, human lifespans are absolutely so finite compared to the geologic timescale of the Earth that you're not going to see, you know, the full picture of things. You're looking at tiny snapshots on a daily basis.
Tyler, so that's how they're selling this stuff. They're saying you don't know anything about the past. It's always been relatively cool. And now it's heating up. When the guy that did the hockey graph, Michael Mann, who showed this graph of temperature, that it's only in the last couple of, you know, decades that the temperature's gone straight up. That's falsified. We know that there was a mini ice age. We know, for example, in the 1800s that the Thames River next to London froze over. We know that in the medieval period there was a cooling. We're being lied to by these people.
Yes, we are being lied to by our politicians. When
I'm talking about scientists.
Not happen, but
scientists.
I would say people need to do that research, and they need to understand, you know, try and figure it out for themselves. Talk to, you know, people within the scientific community.
I understand,
I don't know very much.
Tyler, but you know, there are scientists that are coming out against this stuff, but there is a peril. There is so much pressure, and if you read those East Anglia emails, you'll see that they were gunning for anybody who was opposed to it. We're living at a time, a According to Jonathan Chait, he just wrote a beautiful article, and he's a very liberal guy, but he wrote it in New York Magazine or whatever, that says the opposition, we're reaching a time when the opposition is getting wiped out. People are not allowed to have opposing opinions anymore. It's got to be a consensus. But let me ask you this. Let me shift gears. You're an anarchist. What do you think should be done about radical Islam in Europe, in the Middle East, whatever, over here?
Radical Islam, I don't know how I feel about that term, but I believe that.
What do you mean? Hold on. Wait. Tyler. Hold on a second. Tyler.
US, yeah.
Tyler, hold on a second. Are you you're rejecting the term radical Islam? It doesn't exist?
I don't know. Putting radical Islam together makes it seem like it's as far as the religion itself, whereas I would say what is happening in the Middle East is extremely complicated, and it is probably related to
how... You're sounding like a politician. Is there a problem in Islam? Because if there is an attack anywhere in the world and it's related to religion, it seems like 99 out of 100 times it's related to Islam, and some of these groups don't even know each other.
There are probably sects of people who within the religion are, you know, extremely radical, but I think that's the norm within any type
of religion.
So
where are the Christians? Where's the Christians? Where's the Hindus blowing people up on a daily basis?
I don't know about Hindus, but there's still radicalism within the Christian community. I don't believe in any religion, so I mean, I understand, but from Christians that could almost be parallel to radicalism.
Come on, seriously.
Tyler, I just wanted to say,
hold on a second. I want to take you seriously, but when you say that Christians are doing stuff on the same level as radical Islam, as the jihadists, you're losing me there.
Absolutely nowhere near the same level, but I want to say certain nations happening, and
what you're an anarchist, you would in free have no dogs, and you could do anything you want. You can just choose your own with the jihadists. Would you agree?
I believe that there are deal that is necessary to, and
for dealing this, because they do anything they wanted, including rid of the core with a
Iraq didn't even used to be Iraq.
I know. Again, the answer.
I would leave them alone.
Traveling military caravans, and they're going out there being convert or die. Raping women. They're can to kill people who don't leave them alone.
That we kind of do the same.
Killing me here. Tyler. Yell to yourself. Killing me.
I don't have.
That's okay. Give you a platform to present your ideas. You're getting intellectual hairy. And Tyler, I got a break. Was there anything? Are you Edmund?
I don't know. Free markets for the same hard, you know, it seems like I just. But I also.
All right, folks, got to take a break here. Folks, when you have a chance for the park. Hardcore leftist has got to look at the environment and see that it's not we're not baking to death. So why don't we move on from the catastrophic the secular doomsday prophecy, the Armageddon? Let's move on from that and do something more productive. We're going to put trillions of dollars down the toilet to solve a problem that doesn't exist. There's got to be a better use for our funds.
Not only that, but what we're doing is very, very centered on the U.S. as if we were the only country in the world. We've got India and we've got China. India's opening up one coal mine per month.
No, they're not interested in the global warming rhetoric. They're not interested in the answers because it's going to destroy their economy. Thanks for the call, Ted. I've got to take
it. Really can't. Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot. Okay, bye-bye. All right, so I'm going to tell you very quickly what's going on with – I'm going to tell you very quickly where this young guy – Tyler, great call. I love a call that challenges so that – put through my paces and so the listeners can kind of get an actual debate. I'm not opposed to calls that say I agree with you, by the way. But all right, so anarchy. What is anarchy? Anarchy is technically the lack of rules. It is a situation where there is no basically government authority. Now, when I said, an anarchist in theory could use a nuclear weapon to go kill them, the jihadis, he said, yeah, because there's no rules. All right, so where does the anarchic movement come from? It's actually associated with Marx and the socialists. The early writers on what we call Marxism today, there's a lot of people working on the issues that were involved, working and writing and publishing stuff and advocating for change in Paris and in London. Basically, those are the two. And there was a lot of stuff going on in Germany, but the Germans, they kicked Marx out. Marx went to Paris. He got kicked out of Paris. He ended up living in the library in London. That's where he did most of his writing. In any event, and according to Marx, who is kind of a popularizer of a lot of these ideas, you've got this ancient world, people living as, you know, Cro-Magnon man or whatever, primitive life, living in caves or whatever. And then you have the feudal period. Then where people are basically serfs or whatever, then you've got capitalism, and then capitalism is supposed to transition over to socialism. And socialism is where the government gets involved in the businesses. Well, not the manufacturer, but it basically owns the right to deliver. It gets involved in deciding what's going to be manufactured and who gets it. All right. The next step after that from socialism is into communism. Communism is where nobody owns anything but the government. Private property is abolished. And there have only been a couple of societies that have ever tried to do that, and they've been catastrophic failures. USSR and communist China. But the step after communism is what is known as benign anarchy. And that's where you get rid of the tyranny, temporary tyranny, the tyranny of the proletariat is set aside, and then you're supposed to just live without rules. And that's what where this guy's coming from. That's why he can't say he's not a Marxist, because Marxism is the where this idea comes from. It's not the same thing as libertarianism. So the most fascinating thing about this story is that the model for this really is put together by Auguste Comte, who is a philosopher who basically he goes crazy, and he's never cured of his craziness, because it is, you know what I'm saying, it is he's incurable. And he goes from talking about human rights, sorry, I was trying to multitask there, which I am by definition cannot do, but he goes from this benign, he goes from being fixated on human rights and stuff. After he gets out of the clinic, he starts talking about scientists and a scientific society. He wants science to run everything, which is basically the direction that a lot of people would like us to go to today, that we have adopted a lot of these ideas. But in this anarchy, in this development, in this anarchy is like what Auguste Comte wanted society to become. He wanted to develop a religion of humanity. And John Stuart Mill wanted the same thing. He was writing at the same time, and he was very influenced by Comte. Now, what liberalism has done is create a church without a God in it. I'll just leave you with that thought. We'll take a break here, Kelly O'Connell, and we will be right back to pick up. I want to mention to you this story about Gabbard, which I think is very remarkable, and I'm encouraged by it. We'll be right back. All right. So anyway, all right, so, we've got the explanation of what Tyler stands for. Now, there's this lady from Hawaii, and her name is Tulsi Gabbard, and she has a very attractive lady, and she is actually a veteran of Iraq, and was the youngest person in the history of Hawaii to be elected to the state Senate, the state house. And then she interrupted her political career to go serve a couple of combat periods in Iraq, a couple of tours. Now she came back and she ran for the United States House. Now, she has been a very attractive candidate. She's very telegenic, very well spoken. But here's from the New York Times. In an article that's called "Tulsi Gabbard, Rising Democratic Star from Hawaii, Makes Mark on Party 2 by Defying It." All right. This is what she said, and I was thinking about her response versus the president's. The article explains that after the Paris attacks, she dropped her approach to politics, which was just kind of like staying relatively quiet. And she began to openly disagree with the party, with the White House. And so what she's asking for is, she's become a high profile. I'll just read from the article here a little bit. She's become a high profile critic of President Obama's policies in Syria by amplifying her argument that President Bashar al-Assad should stay in power to avoid elevating the Islamic State and by introducing legislation to defund American efforts to overthrow him. Now, think about this. We've already been bitten in the rear end by the Muslim Spring. We went over and supported Libya, the overthrow there, because they had a dictator, supposedly. No doubt he was a dictator, but he was a friend of the West. They supported the Muslim Brotherhood taking power in Egypt, which was almost a complete disaster. The president was infuriated when the Supreme Court threw the leader of that movement in prison. He was absolutely infuriated. Why? I have no idea, other than he, at some level, must support that group of people. What's the other explanation? And now we have a situation in Syria where there's a civil war going on. It's really a proxy war of these different powers. Somebody said it's the foundation for World War III, and the president has said he wants Assad out. Well, haven't we already learned? Supposedly, the president got into office to cure Iraq. Haven't we already learned you don't remove a strong man and expect something positive to bloom in the aftermath? It's been a disaster in Iraq. If not for the Iraq war, you wouldn't have ISIS growing up. It's been a complete disaster in Libya, a country that's now run by rebels. It's been a disaster in Egypt. They are now sour on us. They don't trust us anymore, and you can't blame them. And Syria is proving once again the president did not follow up on his promise to draw a red line in the sand, and if it was crossed, he would do something about it. So now we've got the civil war going over there, and the only thing the president can really say is that we're doing everything we can to fight ISIS, number one, and number two, that we have a Christian duty to take in Syrian refugees. That's it. Even though the president did more than any other person to create these refugees by not following through on what he said. Now, Tulsi Gabbard has gone to Paris and is now arguing to defeat the Muslim state. Here's what she said that really captured my attention. Listen to this. Quote, my responsibility is to the people of Hawaii and the American people to stand up and fight for what is right and what is in the best interest of our country. This has nothing to do with party politics. Now, I was thinking about how the president has approached this issue. There was an attack in Paris, which, you know, typically Obama never gets upset about anything. He didn't want to change the policy after hundreds of people, including some Americans, were slaughtered. Even though some of the terrorists in Paris were from Syria, he didn't want to change the policy of bringing these people in. And as a matter of fact, the one group that he got angry at was the GOP. And he said the GOP is afraid of five-year-olds and widows. Ignoring the fact that the vast majority of people coming over here or wanting to come over to the West are fighting age Muslim men. They're not kids and women. So people were upset, and this is why I'm all leading up to this. I think the reason that people are upset with the president and are really bucking this Syrian thing is that we've had a lot of stuff shoved down our throat under the theory that the government is smarter than we are. It's not that the Syrians are dangerous, where the fact of the matter is they probably some percentage, even if it's a small percentage, are dangerous. There are going to be ISIS fighters in there, and it's not wrong to point that out. But the problem is Americans are sick in a land of representative government, of being pushed around by this president and being insulted when they don't want to go along with him. And this is just another case. Now you've got a Democrat politician in office saying you couldn't. She says, my responsibility is the people of Hawaii and the American people to stand up and fight for what is right and what is in the best interest of our country. Why is it the only right choice to bring in Syrians or more Syrians? Increase the number to 100,000 like the president wants. Why? Why is that the right thing to do? Right here from this Democrat woman's mouth, you've got an explanation of what's really important. The main thing is not to be as inclusive and as expansive with the border and with immigrants as possible, because that isn't always safe. The most important thing is to defend Americans and protect them. If Obama can't buy into that, he should have never run for office. Number one. And number two, I have to ask you, what is he up to? What is his goal? Why is he in office? What is he trying to do? He never seems to choose the most transparent thing that would most protect Americans. And I'm very troubled by that. 7:49, we'll take a break and be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. All right, so just about done with the show here, but I wanna throw something at you. I think the reason that Donald Trump has arisen and is staying at the top of the polls is because, number one, he's not really the idiot that he comes across as at first to a lot of people. He's got some subtlety in his approach, number one. But number two, more than anything, I think it's because people believe or want to believe, whether it's true or not, that he will stand up for them. And they're tired of being told that they don't know what they're talking about, that their thoughts and beliefs are wrong, that they need to change, they need to go through this politically correct metamorphosis to become good people. Americans understand we are already good people. We're the best people in the world in terms of helping others, in terms of fighting for others, and sharing our wealth here. And people are just hoping that they can get someone to represent them that is a fan of America and who's not afraid to stand up for them and is not going to force a bunch of garbage down their throat. And they look at the president and they watch how he responds to stuff, they do not identify with him, and they're very troubled. And I think most people realize if this guy stays in office long enough, we are going to have a disaster, because so many of the things that he does are sloppy or ill-considered, or he doesn't look at the opposite information. He's uninformed. But more than anything, he's got a bad intention, whatever it is. And we've got a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Mike.
Yeah, briefly.
Briefly, the fact that we even address the it is, you know, the craziness of climate change being responsible for religious fanatic terrorism is appalling, don't you think?
Well, it's ridiculous. I mean, there's no logical connection to say people have to leave their land because of climate change, and then therefore they decide to go and kill other people. It's non sequitur. Anything else? I got a clip I want to play.
Well, I think that I'd like to know, what do you think about Saudi Arabia not taking in any refugees at all?
I think it's ridiculous.
Any of those wealthy,
it's ridiculous.
States.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Thanks for the call. Folks, there's no reason for us to take in the neighbors of people that their own neighbors have no interest in. There needs to be a lot of pressure put on these wealthy, disconnected Middle Eastern states. Here's a little bit from Huckabee on the president's response to the terrorism.
Speaking of our troops abroad, you have a new ad airing on NBC. It's part of their Equal Time to Other Candidates after putting Trump on Saturday Night Live. And it addresses this president's foreign policy. I want to play a few seconds of your new spot. Here it is.
When the president of France was securing his borders and declaring war on Islamic jihadists, our president demanded open borders, declared war on Republicans, and lectured us on what being a Christian means. I'll never apologize for America. I'll make our enemies sorry they ever attacked us.
I like that line, to lecture us on what it means to be a good Christian. There is a sense in the president's comments that if you disagree with him, you're not simply wrong, but you're immoral.
That's one of the frustrating things about this president. He always tries to make it that he has the moral authority and everybody else is wrong, not just wrong in terms of an opinion or a point of view, but wrong morally. And I just find that arrogant, and I find it troubling. And I also find it a very sort of cheap way to keep from having a legitimate discussion about proper policy of dealing with radical jihadism. You don't have a discussion when you say, look, I'm right, you're wrong, end of discussion. And it's not just on this issue, but whether it's Obamacare or whether it's gun control, this is a president who always sort of lifts his head, puts his nose up in the air and tells us that we're just not as strong morally and we just don't have the same virtue and character that he does when it comes to assessing these issues. And I think a lot of Americans truly resent that.
And he used our national holiday, Thanksgiving, to make a pitch for his refugee program, comparing the pilgrims who came here from England to express to live out their faith to Syrian refugees coming here now.
It's absolutely ridiculous to suggest that the Syrian refugees have anything to do with the pilgrims that started this country. The pilgrims and Puritans who started the country came here because they were not allowed to practice their faith without being attacked in England. That's not what happened in Syria. On the alternative, if they come here and enough of them get here, they're going to demand that we agree with them and change our religion. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Takashi.
Takashi, you've got 1 minute. 1 minute. 60 seconds. Go ahead.
I just want to send a shout-out to my friend Tyler, who called in with concrete scientific evidence of climate change. And I just want to say thank you, man, that somebody out there has the fact.
All right. Thanks a lot. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving, and thanks for the call. All right. So we're all in favor of facts around here, but in any event, so one political scientist thinks Donald Trump might actually win. This is from Vox, Vox.com. And the people that are writing the Donald off are ill-informed. It's very possible. And I think that as if time goes, and by the way, I'm not promoting the Donald, and I'm certainly not suggesting that he's the best candidate. But if things continue on like they have been, it's almost inevitable he's going to be the front runner. He's going to be the candidate. And I think if he does, it's because people are sick of getting pushed around and they at least see the Donald as someone who will stand up for him. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, glad to have you back after the holidays. Glad you survived Thanksgiving, and we'll meet back in 22 hours. Have a great day on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, ciao.
Ten seconds.